unfolding laws that users make me roll the infinite and nice. Some converses, some becomes a someone ancient and I'm not trying to go on up defining calypso. Gavin, I'm walking, I'm walking, I got the root, your thing, this got your fuckness, the book of maggot, only bop for the red, the white, and
all right, I'm back. I'm back. Sorry about that, y'all. I did some things I shouldn't have done, but I remedied it. And that was Ring the Alarm, Fushnikins. That's some old school, new school, the new old school, the old new school. Back when they came out, they was the new school, but now that was 20-some odd years ago, so they back to being old school again. But anyway, topic of the day. I'm sorry I went so hard, but you know, sometimes they say never meet your heroes. And I guess, you know, I was disappointed in Glenn Ford. We heard from brother Adolfo, my good brother. And, you know, check him out with America Means Prison, him and his fight against mass incarceration, the mass incarceration that the Democratic Party has brought and imposed on the black community. So anyway, proceeding on, let's talk about interracial relationships. There's been a lot of jawboning. There was this interracial couple, the McClure twins, and apparently this black woman had these two biracial children and the husband, and they were internet sensations. And even I can't lie, my wife, she got two sons. Me and my wife got two sons, and she gets her little girl fix. She likes to look at little girls on the internet and little babies because she doesn't have daughters, but she's very fond of daughters. And we're in the street and she see little cute girls and she walks up to the mothers and compliments them. She has like this daughter thing, you know. She loves little girls, so she likes look the McClure twins. She was a fan. She was a McClure twins, McClure Hive groupie. And then she finds out, this is how I learned about it through my wife, that they were being exploited by their parents, essentially pimped out by their parents for social media fame. And then it came out later that the father was a rabid racist. And then this interracial couple went online to talk about how he used to be a racist, but he ain't a racist no more, which again provoked a debate on interracial relationships. What do they mean? Can they transform the heart of a racist? Can a racist be reformed? But first, let's start with some data. A lot of us are up in arms about interracial relationships, but overall in the United States, only 8.4% of all marriages or long-term relationships are classified as interracial. So over 90% of all people in the United States, and this is as of 2015, as of 2015, which is the most recent data I could, in-depth data I could find, only 90% of people keep it in the house. They bring, if she can't use the comb, don't bring him home. If she can't use the comb, most black and overall in the United States, everybody stays in their own camp. The United States is still well segregated. Even communities and schools here in Chicago are more segregated in 2018 than they were in 1968 at the height of the civil rights and desegregation movement. So all of you people who think like even white folks, you white redneck racists, and you black nationalists, and you black eugenicists who are worried about racial contamination, 90% of y'all are still good. There is no threat of this massive racial melting pot happening anytime soon, not in your generations or your grandchildren's generation, because only 8.4% of people in long-term marriages, reproductive relationships, are actually involved in an interracial marriage. But then they've also found something which will also make you both you rednecks and the blacknecks happy. Black men, when they marry white women, are twice as likely to get divorced. Black versus white relationships are twice, but more than 50%. And so even when Asian men marry white women, they're much higher rate of divorce than if a black man marries a black woman. But when black women marry white men, there's a 44% lower chance of divorce. So black women married to white men are one of the most stable groupings statistically. I don't know what's going on internally, but statistically, one of the most stable. And in the society, this has actually surprised me. Approval for interracial relationship and interracial dating from the black community is almost equal. 70%, 71% of men approve of interracial dating, of black men dating outside the race, and let's just be clear, black men, white women. 71% of the community says, eh, I don't have a problem. And 30% is like, I ain't with that. And there's different rates of approval versus it's not my preference versus burn them all and kick them out of the community. And 75% of black women say it's okay. So, I mean, but, you know, 4%, that's a statistical anomaly. It's about equal, statistically, when you're dealing with large numbers. So, you know, about 75%, 70 to 75% of the black community say, hey, do you, player? So you, the militants who are like, nope, you know, race first and all that, y'all are a very small minority. 85% of black men are with a black spouse or with a black woman. And only 9% of black men have white spouses. Again, that's pretty much consistent with the national average. That's pretty much 8.4 versus 9% interracial relationship is pretty consistent with the national average. It's not as though black men went on this crazy lust train to marry white women. And only 4%, 93% of married black women are married to a black man. 93%, 85% black men. Also, there's other in that stat. There was Hispanic, Hispanic could be black, white, Asian. I don't know what the hell they mean by that. But 3% of black men are with Asians. 3% of black men are with other. And 9%. So, yeah, but that is not that. That is actually a quite significant, almost a 10 percentage distance between black men and black women, which means that black women are by far more committed to marrying within the race. Black women listened harder when grandma said, if he can't use our comb, don't bring him home. Black women heeded those words more so than when black men were told by grandma, if she can't use the comb, don't bring her home. So those are some interesting stats. What those stats is essentially communicate to me is that there isn't this, even though we see on TV, and my wife has a good friend who's like, I don't know what they call, like the mother, whose children are very talented. So they do theater, and they do go out and audition for theater and TV shows and movies, very talented young people. But she said a lot of those calls for auditions, whatever, the documents where they say who they're looking for. She said 90% of them say that they want racially ambiguous black. When they're casting for somebody for a non-white role, they want a racially ambiguous black person. So if we look on TV, we see a lot of black people that have the black or African phenotype. But they're not too dark. Hair ain't too curly. And a lot of times you have to squint and tilt your head like, is that one of us? Is that one of ours? Because that's what they go for. In fact, there was another model who went to audition for to be in, what's the name of the NWA movie? Straight Outta Compton. And she was talking about whatever the writer, I don't know what the technical term for this is when they call the call for audition. Auditions and they list who they're looking for, what type of body type, what type of skin tone, what type of hair texture, what type of voice, European accent, urban accent, southern accent, and all at the top of the list they wanted light yellow, hella light, straight hair, you know, Eurocentric look for black people. This is for the black audition people to audition. And the sister was like, damn, I can't even, you know, I'm too black to audition for a role for a black person in a black movie directed by a black person with all black cast. I'm too black to be in a black movie. So even though we see the certain phenotype or a certain demographic represented, if you just looked at TV, you think, wow, everybody's going biracial. Everybody's mixed or multiracial. But the stats, the raw numbers, you know, it looks like that in Hollywood. It might look like that in Portland or Colorado, but in Kansas, Oklahoma, Missouri, Iowa, Illinois, Georgia, the vast majority of people stay within their race. even though Hollywood and even the American political system wants to give this impression of a melting pot of hordes of biracial, multiracial marriages, interracial marriages and interracial children and biracial, multiracial children and all that, the numbers are pretty stable. So that's one thing. Whether some people might think that's a tragedy. Black people just, we're all so separated. Some people, like myself, might think, hey, I think that's an appropriate, given the divergent power dynamics. Now, here's my thing. I was invited onto a radio show, and they wanted me to answer one simple question. Can you be pro-black and married to a non-black person? Can you be conscious and pro-black? Can you be pan-African and pro-black? And I went on the show, and this is what got me in trouble. There was one male host and two female black women hosts, two black women hosts, one black male host. And the brother asked the questions. And when the sisters were talking, it was, you know, as we did introductions, they asked me about my work, this and that. And then when the brother asked the question, so can a brother be with a white girl and still be pro-black? The sisters got real quiet. They didn't breathe. They didn't blink. And I'm like, this is a setup. I should have asked them to send me the questions ahead of time, but I knew the question. And I said, absolutely, yes. And that's when I lost the sister. They were such nice and very human. You know, it was less of a political show, actually. It was more like a, Breakfast Club or something, like more like a gossip show or whatever. It wasn't really my type of thing. You know, I usually go on more like the politically oriented shows. But anyway, I said, yeah, it can happen, Captain. It can happen. And the sisters lost it. And all I could do was just point to the evidence. I said, Frantz Fanon, one of the greatest black revolutionary philosophers and revolutionary freedom fighters, he was married to a white woman. Sheikh Anta Diop, one of the greatest pro-black pan-African scientists, married to a white woman. What's his name? Kwame Nkrumah, one of the greatest pan-African leaders, one of the first truly black post-colonial presidents, was married to, you know, what I would classify as a white woman. Some might say she's Arab, but, you know, Dr. Bobby Wright told me Arabs were, to classify Arabs as anything other in Africa, as anything other than Eurocentric or Western invaders, is a pathological denial of history. So he wasn't married to an African woman or a black woman. You know, Frederick Douglass, one of the greatest abolitionist voices for justice and abolition of slavery for black people. His second or his final wife, I think he was married only twice. So his second wife was a white woman. Nina Simone, one of the greatest voices of black dignity, black liberation, and black defiance. One of the greatest black artists of all time. Nina Simone married a white man. One of our greatest voices, Leroy Jones, a.k.a. Baraka, Amiri Baraka, married a white woman. I mean, the list, I could go on and on. I don't want to be out here like I'm promoting swirling, as y'all call it now. That's a relatively new term to me. I've never used it before in that context, but I'm not promoting swirling. I'm just saying the evidence of history shows that black people can be married to non-black people and still not only understand, but represent and fight for the interests of the black community. Now, I know y'all, I'm not advocating, but I ain't ready to throw away black people. Now, there are some organizations, some formations, some ideologies that say if you're not married to another black person, you can't roll with us, you can't rock with us, you can't be in our thing. I'm not in a position. The history does not demonstrate to me that we are in a position or that it would be appropriate to throw away black people in interracial relationships. I'm just going off of the history. Now, your emotions, how you feel about it, what you imagine, what happens between the sheets at night when the light go down, maybe that just upsets you to some extent. I understand it. I'm sympathetic to that position. But all I'm saying is the historical record does inform us that black people who are not in black, that are in a relationship with a non-black person, can still be an asset to our community, loyal to our causes. That's all I'm saying. Now, you can criticize their taste, you can criticize their preference, you can criticize their motivations, But you cannot deny that history. I'm not saying that people in multiracial relationships can't be. I ain't saying it's all good. I'm just saying that that's the fact. If that's the reality, that's the reality. And if you're going to throw away black people in interracial relationships, there's a lot of iconic freedom fighters, African revolutionary philosophers, abolitionists that you're going to have to throw out too. And some of y'all so big, bad, militant, y'all ready to throw away Nkrumah, y'all ready to throw away Douglas, y'all ready to do that. Y'all just that bad. Y'all that hardcore. Y'all that damn militant. And I say, more power to you. I would not encourage you to do otherwise. I mean, if I could be more hardcore, but it's just me, I'd prefer. I used to be purely ideological. But then I found that it's not as effective than being rational and science-based. So based on my review of history, I ain't saying it happens all the time. I'm not even saying it's the common occurrence. I ain't even saying it's the standard. But there's a potential for it. And if the evidence tells me otherwise, then I will acknowledge otherwise. Now, Dr. Bobby E. Wright did say that he agreed with me that we don't throw away our people. You know, they still our brothers. They still our sisters. If they're not acting against the interests of their community and they want to make this individualist decision to love who they want to love, that's fine. But he said that black people in relationships with non-black people should not hold leaderships in our organizations, in our liberation organizations. If we have health, cultural, but in liberation, militant, freedom-fighting organizations, just for appearance purposes only, that we should, for black liberation, black militant, black conscious organizations, one of the prerequisites we should put for our organizations that you must have a black spouse if you're going to lead a black liberation movement, if you're going to have a spouse at all. So one thing I know, black people, I support self-determination. If the community says these are the standards, these are the protocol, and I'm able to say, well, this is rational, or it's at least benign, then I move with the people. That's what I was saying. Sometimes people are so accustomed to going against the grain that even when the people make the right decision, we still oppose them. You know, people still oppose them. So you don't want to be stagnant or stringent. You know, you want to be, and Kwame Ture said, we can be flexible on methods and tactics, but we can't be flexible on principles or our ultimate agenda. That's what we never compromise on. We never negotiate. So there is room for flexibility. There's room for empathy and understanding. And if we look at the flip side, in terms of the white side of it, if white people threw away all of their, because if white people threw away all of their people who were in interracial relationships, they wouldn't have a constitution. The United States wouldn't exist. Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, they were raping black women. Left and right, up and down, sideways. So we know that who you have sex with is not that big of an indicator of your ideology. And we also know there are several black upon black couples. Now, my own personal experience, the majority of black people in interracial relationships, they're on the side of, they're not Kwame Nkrumah's, they're Clarence Thomas's. And who they marry is a reflection of their rejection of themselves, or rejection of the community. But I do think that, for the most part, I don't think that I would we can't level that blanket accusation. We can't level that blanket accusation. But I do think it's appropriate that if you're a black person in a relationship with a white person, that black people say, yo, what's up with that? I think that's an appropriate question, simply because white people oppress us. White people impose genocide on us. White people colonize our land. White people are holding our resources and owe us unpayable amount of reparations. So I do think it's a valid question. But I also think that we can't ignore the history or the reality of interracial relationships. So from a rationalist point of view, we don't have that much to fear. There is not, for you black eugenicists, there is not this mad rush. And some sister said to me the other day, all these basketball players married to white women. NBA professional black basketball players don't make up 0.5% of the population. They're high profile. And I know a lot of visible black people, a lot of elite black people, a lot of celebrity black people. But even then, the majority of basketball players and the majority of celebrities, Denzel, Will Smith, Idris Elba, Samuel Jackson. But here's the thing. I will see one picture of Samuel Jackson and his beautiful black wife, but Michael B. Jordan goes to Italy and has a boat party. So the very people who claim to be against a behavior give it the highest profile and the highest priority and promote it the most. And I remember I told you about the ratio. If you're going to promote something you're against, share a link of an issue that you're against, share 2 to 3 links of stuff you support and you endorse. So even if you have a problem with interracial relationships, even if you want to be able to dictate what individual people do in their bedrooms, whether it's being gay or being in an interracial relationship, even if that's the case, y'all be an alarmist. Oh, every black man is with a white woman. Every black woman, all these black women, some silly black woman wrote a silly book telling black women. And who's that girl that makes that Insecure show that made some joke about black women and Asian men? And we just get all up in arms. But reality, it's not that many of us crossing that line. And the few of us who cross that line are not as pernicious or malicious in doing so as Clarence Thomas. There are some, but if a brother goes online and tweets, I love my black women, he might get a little mileage out of it. But if a black man goes online and say, oh, these black females is ratchet, that's why I love me some white women, it's going viral. It's going viral. It's getting everywhere. It's going to get so much play. That one guy, the black guy that's in all the Star Wars movies. Forgive me for not knowing his name. I saw he was in that movie Attack the Block. Go see Attack the Block. That's some low budget, good quality sci-fi. I love Attack the Block. I don't know his name. Issa Rae is the one who said about the Asian. But the black dude from the Star Wars movies, the Brickstonian, he went on a show to promote his movie. And somebody said, who are you looking for in terms of love? You're a big star now, big time Hollywood. You scored one of the biggest franchises in Hollywood history. So you're single. You're the most eligible bachelor in Hollywood. So what do you look for in a lady? And he's like, well, bottom line, first of all, out the gate's got to be a sister. I need me a black woman. Everything else, is negotiable. Terms of everything, every other characteristic, feature, personality trait is negotiable, but she got to be black. And John Boyega, thank you. I know the internet be repping, yo. Shout out to SC Evans, John Boyega. And this didn't go nowhere. I think my wife might have showed it. Like, hey, I like that boy. And my wife don't really like the Star Wars movie. She likes more cerebral stuff. She don't like explosions and monsters. But she watches them because I like sci-fi. She sits with me through. She likes some of the Marvel movies. She, of course, like Black Panther. She liked Thor Ragnarok. But Star Wars, she just don't get with Star Wars. Now, if I had known this before she got pregnant, I'd probably be with somebody that had a better taste in cinematic features. But now I'm stuck. But she don't like Star Wars movie, but she loves John Boyega. And she'll go see the movies just to support him. But this didn't go viral. I didn't see article after article and black folks like, yeah, and I didn't hear no parade. But Michael B. Jordan went to Italy, all white girls on the boat. I can't log on to any form of social media. And sisters, oh, look at Michael B. Jordan. Oh, look at Wakanda Forever. Oh, and we losing our stuff. So if I didn't do the actual research, if I didn't look at the true demographics, if I didn't pay attention to the stats, I only paid attention to social media traffic, which is the vast majority of people get their news. They don't even watch CNN, NBC. The vast majority of people get their news from their peers, from links and memes and articles shared by their peers. And if I was only getting my information from the social media universe, I think every black man that got half a nickel in his pocket is either wants a Kardashian or has a Kardashian. But when we look at the cold, hard facts, black men, 90% prefer black women, black women. So if you advocate for black love is the thing. Now, what we actually need, because also the stats about what they see is key to family stability, is having adequate resources and support. So if you love the black family, it's more than just trying to see. And we need to have better internal support. We need to reinforce and build up our communities. If you really love black families, then you're going to have to create a system of communal support, communal enterprises, where our people can look inward for the resources that we need to build and advance stable relationships. But getting out here chasing Becky off, Becky with the good hair, is not our problem. Becky with the good hair is not the problem for the black community. Becky with the nuclear bombs, Becky with control over the resources, Becky with control over legislative resources, Becky with the badge and gun on her hip from the police department, Becky with the GMO farm, Becky with the pharmaceutical company, Becky with the medical license giving substandard health care to our people. There's a lot of Becky's doing us a lot of harm, but Becky with the good hair, her hair ain't the problem. It's the power dynamic and the resource dynamic. The resource deficits and the power dynamic. But we focus more on who we laying with than who we supposed to fight with. And I'm saying if that's your thing, that's your thing. I ain't saying don't fight Becky, but we mad at Becky for the wrong reasons. And Michael B. Jordan is full of it. He's an ass. Because he said ain't no black women in Italy. Italy is the fashion capital of the world. There's nothing. The hottest thing in the fashion world right now are Senegalese and Sudanese models. And Italy is the gate to Europe for most Africans. Italy has so many Africans that they just elected a president based on the promise that he was like, I will stop the Africans from coming here and kick the Africans that are currently here out. He said there's no black people in Italy. So that is a bigger crime than having a boat with all white women, boat party. Have a boat party with all white women if that's your thing. Me being the type of dude I am, if I went to the boat party, I'm like, there's no vegan. You know, I'm just an old, married, middle-aged married man. I'm dead inside. So I wouldn't even be paying attention to the women. I'd be like, are there vegan options on the buffet at the boat party? That's what outrages me. I want to know, did he have vegan options? Dishes on the buffet. Y'all worried about the butts and the breasts and all. I'm like I said, I'm a middle-aged man, father of two, got me a fence and a 2.5 kids and a dog. I'm statistically grounded. I'm done. I'm out the game. I'm out the running. I'm out of the loop. So the stuff that outrages y'all is different than what outrages me. I just like, if I was invited and I was in Italy, I might think I'd be out here blogging about the lack of vegan options. And then y'all see Brother Diallo was on that boat. And I'm like, I didn't even see any women. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, we have different things. But anyway, what I'm saying is for him to say he went there and was basically like, there are no black people. So he erased not only a population of black people, but a population of black people that are under racist repression in Italy. That's a bigger problem than partying with white girls. It's the erasure and denial of the very existence of our people. So if somebody come and say, oh, there's no black people in Italy, that's like some brother coming from the UK talking about there are no black people in America. They there, Michael B. Jordan. You just don't give a damn about them because they're segregated. They're oppressed just like black people under white oppression everywhere else. So at least say, don't lie on us. Don't tell no lie. Just tell, man, just keep it real. Be 100 with it. Like, man, I don't care who was on the boat. That's what the rappers started saying when they were like, why you got all these white and racially ambiguous girls? You ain't got no phenotypically African women in your videos. And they were like, we don't do the casting calls. We just show up and do the cooning. I just show up, take the Uzi and the crack pipe and wave it around and promote degeneracy and death to my community for money. And then I leave. I don't know who the women are. So that's what he's trying to do. Like, I it wasn't my thing. And he come and say, black people are so stupid. Black people, y'all bugging. But I think y'all bugging too, but for a different reason. To hell with him. But if that's really your thing, advocating black upon black, black on black love, then why are you sharing Michael B. Jordan? If you're going to share Michael B. Jordan's nonsense, at least share Boyega's interview. Stop giving the impression that isn't true. So y'all are creating a statistical falsehood. 90% of brothers that are married ain't married to white women. And the few that are, not all of them are Clarence Thomas that hate us. Who knows their circumstances? You know, I know some black people. I look at some brothers and I'd be like, ain't no way a sister gonna deal with you. I'm sorry. There's certain, you know, certain people, there are black people coming up in Wyoming. Even in when I was growing up in Kansas City, I lived in the inner city. There were some black people from Wyandotte and way out certain places. One time, me and my homie, we were out, wanted to go to this gun range. And he was like, hey, they got this one gun range where you can bring your own gun, but they got like these military. And we were in rural Kansas. And he's like, yo, we're going to be able to shoot these big military guns, bazookas. And I'm like, okay, let's go out here and do some shooting. And so we're at rural Kansas and get lost off the dirt road. And we pulled up to this sharecropper shack because this is in the late 90s. This wasn't even 2000 yet, like 98. We didn't have no GPS. So I'm like, hey, there's one black person that we saw. I don't know what town it was. We were halfway between Topeka and Kansas City. I don't know where the hell we were. And so I pull up and this brother come out. And I'm like, yo, Jamal, what did this dude just say? And he's like, I have no idea. Let's just nod and hopefully we can drive off. And that dude's country as hell. It's the kind of country like barefoot, pig slop, you know, get her done. So, I mean, this black people are everywhere in all types of ideological and sociological and cultural milieus. You know, so it ain't just every time a brother or a sister ends up with a non-black spouse, it's not because they have some inbred hatred of themselves or the black race. I don't know the circumstances. I can't even say I relate. But at least talk to the brother or sister. You know, I've talked to some black people in interracial relationships, and I'm like, yo, what's up with that? And I've gotten some pretty good feedback. And some people are like, I ain't got to explain nothing to you. And, you know, that's that too. But, you know, that's your business. That's your custom. But I don't like the alarmism. I don't like the alarmism. If you're going to talk to our community about relationships, black love, relationships, I think you should be grounded in the facts. Don't raise the alarm that the black race is going to be genetically annihilated. That's the same nonsense. That's not our problem. The annihilation from climate change, annihilation from nuclear bombs, annihilation from an economic collapse. There's a lot of things that can potentially annihilate the black race. But interbreeding, intermixing, intermarrying with non-blacks is not a threat at this time. When it becomes a threat, I'd be the first person to ring the alarm. But I'm not a geneticist. I'm not a eugenicist. I'm not a Puritan in terms of pure blood and all that. I'm not into breeding humans. So this issue that gets a lot of attention in the black community is not that much of an issue. And I know, even when they say, well, there aren't a lot of functional black men out here, that's not a problem of interracial marriage. That's a problem of racial oppression. Now, we can also talk about the psychology in terms of the manipulation of images, in terms of black people growing up seeing Barbie and Ken dolls and seeing all these heroic white people, Wonder Woman and Superman, and that affects our minds and the Western white standards of beauty and basically the psychological warfare, the psychological manipulation and mind twisting of black people that might lead a black person to see white women or white men as more attractive and more desirable than black people. But that's not a relationship issue. That's a geopolitical issue. That's a warfare. That's a military issue. You're not going to, by the time you get to the bedroom, you've already lost the fight. So if you want to fight that, the psychological destruction, the mental side against our people, that's an institutional problem. That's not an interpersonal problem. So you don't fight that issue in the bedroom. You don't fight that issue on the deck of Michael B. Jordan's boat, yacht. You fight that issue in institutions, media institutions, economic institutions, social, cultural, political institutions. Because by the time you're fighting it on Michael B. Jordan's deck boat, you're done. You've already lost. You know, that's like trying to rally dead soldiers to your army. You don't recruit dead soldiers to your military. So you nip it in the bud, or you got to do a radical analysis. And then you can't just focus on the mass media manipulation making black people desire whites or see whites as more desirable than blacks. You can't just say, well, I don't like that component of it, but you accept the capitalism, the materialism, the individualism, the resource rape, the industrialism, all the other components of this that we're indoctrinated into. You just pick that one. So you got to fight overall mass propaganda, mass indoctrination, and menticide, and all elements of it. But the problem is a lot of these black people that love black love, like Dr. Umar, yeah, get you a black woman, get you two or three of them. But then you want to embrace capitalism, patriarchy, sexism, and all the other elements of the same system. So if you're going to fight one element of it, and that's how you lose legitimacy. I can't get out here and say I want to promote veganism and the environment and I care about the babies, but I don't fight imperialism. Because what's more destructive to the environment than warfare and imperialism and resource rape? I can't just get out here and tell my butt, eat healthy, be holistic, burn your sage. I can't be for holistic health if I'm not for revolutionary freedom fighting liberation. So I'm off. I understand that element of it, but that fight is not to be had in the bedrooms of other people. That fight is to be had on the global arena, on the stage, on the global media system, and the global education system, and the global economic system. So I ain't saying that's not a necessary and relevant fight. I'm saying y'all picking the wrong battlefield. But it's a battle. It's not because it's easier when you were talking about the salacious sex as opposed to the ideological manipulation, the more technical scientific aspects of the psychological warfare. It's easier to just talk about Kanye and Kim Kardashian. You know, you looking at the fallout. You're not looking at the bomb factory. You're looking at the fallout. So that's that. I don't know if I've solved this issue, but I do think there's a lot of alarmism. And I understand because there's been a lot of maladaptation. Go back and listen to my show, Fetishizing the Black Family, at the archives, where I talk more in depth about the solutions for the black family. And black men marrying white women and black women marrying white men are not a threat to us collectively. In fact, white spouses, it's shown, the statistics show, the biggest harm that white spouses do is to the individual they're married to. And you can tell by the McClure twins situation. And I'm running out of time because I want to talk about reform racism as a whole, because a lot of these white people that marry black spouses, we're finding out they had some racist views, racist feelings, racist statements, racist insights. And there's this viral video that I never watched, just utter nonsense, about some former skinhead neo-Nazi that married a black woman and that black woman taught him not to be racist. Again, let's go to the historical record. I picked out three of my favorite reformed racists, people that used to be that ain't no more. And one of them was William Lloyd Garrison. William Lloyd Garrison is the most famous white abolitionist in U.S. history. But they don't teach about him in schools. There are no monuments. They got all these monuments to Confederate enslaving rapists. George, they got all these rapist pedophiles on the currency. George Washington raping underage slave girls. Thomas Jefferson raping black women and then selling off those children that he sired. Disgusting. But you don't see William Lloyd Garrison any monuments. There ain't no William Lloyd Garrison because white people hate good black people. White people. They hate good white people more than they hate good black people. So anyway, William Lloyd Garrison, in his 20s, decided he wanted to be a part of the American Colonization Society. And even though history tries to say that American Colonization Society was about sending blacks back to Africa, but this is not a Garveyism thing. What the American Colonization Society really wanted to do was send free blacks back to Africa. They said the only black people that should be in the United States are slaves. There shouldn't be any free black men on U.S. soil. So if you're a black person who is a freeman, born a freeman, we're going to kick you out of the country. And if you're a black person who somehow secures your freedom through running away, through meritorious manumission, or you buy yourself out of slavery, the various ways that black people could get out of slavery, or even if you fought, you had a successful revolt. They said, we don't want any free blacks within U.S. territory. So a lot of black people who, white abolitionists, joined this society, and a lot of it was financed by some slave owners. It's like, listen, if there's a free nigger up north, I'll pay for him to get the hell out of my country. You know, build that wall. And William Lloyd Garrison was a member of this. But eventually, William Lloyd Garrison became enlightened and says, even in Africa, that black man is not free. You know? So we're just sending him to a different form of enslavement, colonization, oppression. So he became what began to advocate what they call universal abolition, universal freedom and suffrage for all people, and the total abolition of the slave system. So some could argue that he reformed, he became enlightened. Another person is Che Guevara. Che Guevara was a racist. And when I talk about Che Guevara's ideas, when I reference his books, there's some black people that are like, Che didn't like black folks. And I don't deny that. Che was what? He was part of the Latin American elite. Che was a descendant of a Spaniard. And he was mixed heritage of native South American and European conquistador blood. But he went on to be a physician and came up in the upper classes. And so he had that sentiment. But in 1965, after the Cuban Revolution, almost 10 years after the Cuban Revolution, a little less, he went to Africa to fight in the Congo. And he met up with Laurent Kabila. And even though he had great criticisms of the Africans there said that they saw that he began to really understand African culture, the African plight, how the African came to be who they are, and developed a great respect for Africa as a whole. And even went on to say that Africa is the linchpin. Once Africa's free, the Europeans would, which is a lot of Africans said it before and after, anti-colonial fighters, if the Europeans, if the imperialists, if the capitalists lose hold of Africa, all their other imperial designs will crumble. Africa is the linchpin. Even though he said, you know, he had a lot of issues with his particular with Kabila. He said that the leaders of the guerrilla forces are corrupt. The leaders of the guerrilla forces are incompetent. And they are only trying to, which eventually Che was proven true, because Kabila did come to power. And everything Che predicted actually came true. He said, and so he did have some valid criticisms of the freedom fighters and their methods and their standing. But he developed an appreciation for African people, African culture, as he lived in Africa, Dar es Salaam and in the Congo and West and North Africa for several years. From 65 to 69. And then when the Africans who fought alongside him said that, yeah, we say that we never met, because they called him white. They said Che was a white man. By our standard, he's white. And they said, we've never encountered, he was one of the first white men that we encountered that actually had full respect and treated the Africans with dignity, had respect for our culture, our life. So He's another one you could potentially classify as a reformed racist. And then finally, Smedley Butler. And Smedley Butler was an imperialist. He was a mass murderer. He was a Marine that went over the world, and he took down the Philippines, which was had a large, enormous black population, and many black soldiers that were conscripted to go fight in the Philippines defected and fought with the Filipinos and against their own nation. And Smedley Butler was in throughout Latin America. He helped. He was one of the chief people that helped build the U.S. empire. Without Smedley Butler, there would not be, or at least not as rapidly, the U.S. would have been expanded. He was in the U.S. military from early 1900s up to 1930s. After leaving the military in 1933, he also, during the Great Depression and the Roosevelt, he became a staunch anti-imperialist. And if you know anything about imperialism, imperialism is racism. And any white person that not only does not support imperialism, but stands in principled opposition and fight against imperialism, and then means they have to be anti-racism, because imperialism is based on racism. They feed each other. They're incestuous cousins. So those are the three people that I find could be classified as reformed racists, famous people that you could look up, versus, you know, I could talk about, you know, Roscoe from Southern Kansas, but you wouldn't know. You have to take my word for it. But these are people you could actually research and come up with your own conclusion. But this is what I found out about racism and reform racist. Reform racist is a phenomenon that is absolutely irrelevant to the black experience and to black people. So even though I did all this look and say, hey, can a person who had racist views, who was a white supremacist, who engaged in racist imperialism or held ideas that the white man was superior to the black man, or who advocated policies, who advocated programs that were damaging to the black community, and then turn around and advocate for programs that were advantageous to the black community? Because to me, I didn't really care about how people felt, whether I like black people or don't like black people. To me, it was more about the concrete actions. Person who was taking actions against our people's interests, and then people who turn around and take actions to correct what they did wrong and to advance what was right. And I think we focus too much on how people feel or don't feel, or what people think or don't think. And Amos Wilson told us, as we organize and we secure power, people's thoughts and feelings about us are irrelevant. But what I do find about people overt racist, because a lot of the white people that do the most damage to us would never, ever use the N-word, who use the proper, you know, would never call Africa an S-hole country, who have many black friends and even black spouses. But they're concrete. What? Neoliberalism, capitalism, imperialism, militarism, materialism. They advocate some of the most anti-human and racist policies you can conceive of. And I don't care about their feelings. What do you advocate? And we've been talking about interracial relationships and black. And you know, you got the soul brother number one, Obama, and his Nubian wife. And look at, they've been so treasonous, and it's going to take us a generation and a half, if we ever do recover, even if we all, if every black person woke up to Obama's treason today, and Trump's presidency is a byproduct of Obama's treason. There wouldn't have been no Trump without Obama's betrayal. Trump was carried into the White House on Obama's shoulders. And not literally and almost figuratively. You saw how they was playing handmade to Michelle, and Trump walked through the door, and Michelle and Barack helping her, and she's younger than both of them. Why they helping her? She's younger than him. She should have been carrying Miss Obama's water. So black people, it's really our role not to determine whether or not a racist can be reformed. But if that is your thing, there's nothing that I saw reformed racist people to get a white person who runs around saying nigger this and nigger that and monkey this and monkey that, nothing changes their attitude and their behavior quicker than a change in the power dynamic. There are just as many racists in here in 2018 as there was in 1918. But their behavior is greatly changed, has been modified, because they know you walk up to the average brother on the south side of Chicago. You walk up to the average brother in backwoods Mississippi. You walk up to the average brother anywhere. The internet is full of examples. You're going to get as good as you give. So watch your mouth. So when black people made that fundamental change in our behavior, in our communal culture, it changed them. It might not have changed their hearts. It might not have changed their belief system, but it changed their behavior. Now white folks are like, damn, if I want to abuse black folks, I got to go get a badge. I used to just any old drunk white boy could walk up talking sideways. But now you better come with a badge. You better come with the U.S. military and an assault squad if you want to come to us sideways. So now if we can translate that individual behavior in terms, you know, I'll whoop a racist head. I'll whoop a redneck's head. Because there was always, if you read the book Native Son, in the intro of that book, he talked about the biggers. He said there were black men all over the South during the height of Jim Crow, of the black codes, during the height of the lynching eras, that ate where they wanted to eat, did what they wanted to do, and even flaunted white women. Probably one of the most famous examples of that is Jack Johnson. They had them white women, and they did everything they wanted to do. Walk up in the middle of a white bar, and if a Peckerwood says something sideways, I'll cock him across his jaw. And white folks was like, well, he's, and they would, and Professor William Mackey gave a lecture and wrote an article called The Crazy Niggas. The black people they couldn't handle, and they didn't want trouble with, they just were like, that's a crazy nigga. So if he walks in and sits in the white place, just give him his food, eventually he'll go away. But it was tolerable because they were just one in a million. The vast majority of blacks know how to behave. And so we got this one crazy nigga, we'll just, you know, overlook that. But then all of us lost our damn minds. All of us went a little bit crazy. Like, you come here, you can get in your pickup truck and come here and burn a cross if you want to. Fred Williams is really credited with that. It ain't Martin Luther King that stopped the lynchings and the cross burning. It was the Dinkins for self-defense. It was Negroes with guns, Fred Williams, that said, arm yourself and kill these Peckerwoods if they come to harm you, if they come to violate you, if they disrespect you, break their noses and kill them. That's what he said. And that's what a lot of black folks started doing. And then that epiphany was awoken, that black people had that awakening. And that's when we went from being a model minority to being no good thugs and criminals. That's when the same white people that forced us into this country to live amongst them said they could no longer live around us. It wasn't about proximity to black people. It was about power over black people. If they got power over you, they'll love you. They'll let you live with them. They'll let you live in their house, not just in their neighborhood. You can live in their basement. So it had nothing to do with proximity. So in this issue with reform racism, it's not really our job to reform racists, to awaken white people. It's our job to liberate ourselves and reduce any type of capacity they have to harm us, exploit us, and steal our resources. And who gives a damn whether you like me or not? We shouldn't be able to say nothing about our survival or well-being should be mitigated by white people's liking or dislike of us, because that's power. So my ultimate conclusion is, yeah, there are some few historical examples of people that had racist behaviors. I don't know about their feelings. I'm not talking about their feelings. I'm talking about their actions. There are a few examples of white people who took racist actions and then took counter-racist actions, counter-imperialist actions, counter-supremacist actions. But let me tell you something. It's not relevant. I don't care. I don't care. And this thing about white allies, let me tell you something. White people have not demonstrated the capacity to save themselves. So I don't really sure how they're going to save us when they can't even save themselves. The white people, the number one threat to the white masses is the white elites. But anyway, I'm running out of time. We can pick this up. Please come today. And if you're mad that I done said some things I didn't have to say about some issues and individuals that you support, then holler at me. And we can continue this discussion. I'll be live again Friday morning at 7 a.m. Central Standard Time, Q4 Radio. You can find us at AM 16. And we're going to be on the FM dial, so we'll have a bigger audience. Support the Bro Diallo Show. You'll find this show archived at DialloKenyatta.com. And shout out to the Nubians for Literacy, NFL, National Book Club. Be on the lookout for that. Be on the lookout for the Chelsea Fitness, Communal Fitness, Free Farm Sparring Sessions, bike rides, trying to get our health up, trying to get off that swine and get our health and fight chronic disease and build camaraderie and connection in the Black community. It's going. This is revolution, y'all. Let's make it happen. Peace.